online world, a world where brutal honesty is encouraged, where insults are rewarded, where there's no fear of reprisal when you tell someone they are worthless, and oh right, maybe a few people end up killing themselves because they just couldn't take it. Listening to me say that makes you cringe, right? That attitude is horrifying in normal, rational conversation. Even now, it produces feelings of remorse. I want to apologize. I'm so sorry. Can I make things right? These inhibitors, these notions of consequences, are totally absent from the world which motivated 12-year-old Rebecca Ann Sedgwick of Lakeland, Florida, to kill herself. A story you may have heard about, another casualty of online bullying. Local police say there are consequences. Two young women, aged 14 and a 12-year-old, have been charged with aggravated stalking. That's a third-degree felony.
What you're doing is you're setting up a circumstance for them to collect a felony record and possibly, depending on the set of circumstances, go to jail or prison for a very long period of time.
That's Sheriff Grady Judd at a news conference in Winter Haven, Florida. Joining us is Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate and a fellow at Yale Law School. She's the author of Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy. Intervening in this brutal bullying conversation, Bazelon says, has a lot to do with putting yourself in the social media world and little to do with what the police might do in the real world if you get caught.
We worry that kids go online and they can sometimes adopt these brasher, harsher personas and say things they would never say in real life. And, you know, obviously that's something adults do too.
Sure.
So you're asking, okay, when kids are on social media sites doing things which are cruel and can be harmful, how do adults even know they're there? And this is a huge challenge for parents especially, right? Because we didn't grow up with this kind of access ourselves and we're often feeling a step behind our own teenagers. I think the most important opportunity is when your kids first enter into this world. So what I say to my own kids as they're lobbying to get onto social media, because I have a teenager, I would not open the door of my house in New Haven at midnight and say to my son, you know, go explore the city. I hope it goes well for you. I hope you live out the values I've imparted to you. And in the same way, I would not tell him to enter into this online new world by himself. I want to be there guiding him in the beginning, making sure that he understands how to use it responsibly.
Although, of course, there are a lot of parents who didn't intervene in the beginning, and there is a world out there that's already sort of up and running. And I guess if we think of it as a parallel world, kind of like your metaphor of going outside and exploring the city and good luck with that kind of thing. I mean, in the city, in the real world, there are real police who, you know, who monitor behavior. There are constraints within our society that have been built up over a long, long period of time. Does that argue for basically a set of constraints within the digital world on some level that makes it more like the real world where there are police out there? It's not just some customer service issue on Yahoo where if you say a bad word, somebody's going to de-spam you. That there has to be a much more responsible idea of how we regulate behavior online because it is an actual world.
I agree. And I think that the social media companies have a bigger responsibility than they are living up to here to do the kind of policing you're talking about. You know, they all have rules against bullying and harassment. The problem is enforcing those rules. And the way American law works, we don't give these sites any legal responsibility to go out and make sure these are places where, in terms of kids' social welfare, they feel safe.
So let me run this by you as a law school professor. In one of these cases of suicide, these recent cases of suicide, one of the internet responses among people who apparently had no particular concern about anyone reading this said, yes, ick, I know, I bullied Rebecca and she killed herself. You know, no big deal. There were other acronyms in there that were more obscene than that. Does that constitute assault if we were wandering around the world and actually said that in a public restaurant?
I honestly read that post more as a sad cry for help and a feeling of guilt and shame and defensiveness. But maybe what you're also asking is, should there be consequences? And I think, yes, when kids are really cruel online, there should be consequences. What I question is whether the criminal justice system is really the place for those consequences, whether bringing felony charges against a 12 and 14-year-old to set an example, because that's really what's going on here, whether that is really fair and makes sense.
Well, fairness, I don't know, but makes sense. I agree. The whole criminal justice system weighing in here feels like a message from Mars that, in a sense, we regulated the communications industry, television and radio, in terms of content when those technologies emerged. Here, it's not about content. It's about behavior and activity. This is an electronic domain that needs a fundamentally different idea of regulation if it's going to be able to coexist with our society.
Right. So we have three levers we can pull here. We have laws. We could change our laws and try to regulate more. Then there's the architecture of the web. Are there things we could do to send kids warnings? Could there be an algorithm that could pick up the kind of cruelty you are talking about and then maybe not even prevent kids from posting, but just say, hey, do you really want to share this message with 400 people? And then there's social norms, which can be incredibly powerful.
Very powerful.
And right now, I think we're just in the middle of a wave of really trying to get kids to think about bullying online and offline and how they can make it not socially acceptable.
I think the thing that interests me, and it just occurred to me in what you were saying, is that, you know, the Edward Snowden case is an object lesson here in the sense that, okay, fine, so the government's going to observe behaviors that are related to national security. Maybe that technology would be more useful in creating some of these kinds of warning signs, social sort of inhibitors, to just encourage people that when they're online and behaving in a passionate, emotional way, that there are consequences.
I would rather see private companies develop those kinds of tools. The idea of the government doing it is a little too big brother for me.
And yeah,
I think
agree.
The company, right, that has that problem to it. But I completely understand your impulse here. You're basically grasping for a way to make this world more parallel to the real world in that people are watching what kids are doing and trying to protect them and make sure they understand that there can be consequences for doing things that are wrong.
Well, it's a great conversation, and I think, you know, more people than just parents need to have it, that's for sure. Emily, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate, fellow at the Yale Law School, author of Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.